This October, join Butwaitho in support of St. Jude Children's Research Hospital.
St. Jude is committed to transforming cancer care with the goal of curing at least 60% of children worldwide with six of the most common forms of cancer by 2030.
With your support, you will help St. Jude stay true to its life-saving mission, finding cures, saving children.
Donate to support the treatment of childhood cancer around the world at stjude.org/butwhytho. Again, that's stjude.org/butwhytho. The podcast, and today we're talking about the friendly ghost Casper. As always, I'm Kate. I'm here with Adrian.
Hey, how's it going?
And Matt.
Hello.
And we decided to just do a spooky episode for Halloween that I'm actually not leading. It's Adrian today.
Yeah, I think this is like a early fun fact. This is the second year in a row that I've done a spooky episode, because technically I did Scooby-Doo last year in October.
Oh yeah, that's
so
right.
You know, I'm up in my spooky game this year.
Oh wow, and look out.
Look out. But also, like, the stuff that Kate's gonna cover is much scarier, and I'm doing Casper the Friendly Ghost, so it's not even like really all that scary. But it's okay. So
I also do feel like we need to point out that our friendly ghost Alex isn't here for this episode.
This is true. I have later in the show notes that Casper is basically like the ghost boy version of Mr. Rogers. So like that tracks that Alex should be here.
Hi, Alex. I know you're listening.
So, Casper, the 1995 movie, actually just turned 25 years old in May of this year. So, pretty good time to do it. And I know no one wants to hear this, but it's actually playing in the Draft House this weekend. So, if you want to go see Casper the Friendly Ghost.
You want to up your chances of becoming a ghost.
You can go to the Austin Draft House and go see it in two different locations. Yeah.
Well, good.
In reality, please use your best judgment. Don't take this as condoning going to the theaters.
Yeah, you know, just do what you gotta do. But also, like, you can see this online, like on YouTube, I'm pretty sure, for free. Just see it at home for free. So, our intro question, Casper's been around for a very long time. So, when did you first meet Casper the Friendly Ghost? Matt?
I'll go with probably the 1995 movie. But obviously, I think I've watched some of the cartoons that we'll probably get into, but outside of that, like, I would have to say 1995, because I don't know what came first. I know the 95 thing is the large, you know, the big, large Casper thing out of all the years of Casper, which is weird when I think about Casper, because, not that I don't like Casper, Casper just hasn't been around. It's not even like Scooby-Doo, where I felt like the quality and stuff and Teenage Mutant Turtles that we talked about, kind of the quality of the show just that went downwards, or just, you know, ended up not being the demographic or whatever. Casper, I just don't even think he actually existed for like a good last 25 years, probably.
You're not wrong. And we'll talk a little bit about that. We talk about kind of like how long it has been around. But yeah, the TV show that you're probably remembering came after the 1995.
Then it'd probably be the 1995 thing then.
Yeah, that probably tracks. Kate?
Okay, question. Did Casper do crossovers with Scooby-Doo?
I think that they did have one crossover at one point, because this is all coming out around the same time, and they're all kind of doing crossovers everywhere.
Okay. Because in my brain, because I know Ghoul School isn't Casper for Scooby-Doo Ghoul School, which was one of my favorite movies, like short things that they had for Scooby-Doo. But I could have sworn that the first time I ever saw Casper was in Scooby-Doo, but it really could have just been me taking the little ghost in Ghoul School and thinking that was Casper retroactively. So I'm gonna also go with the 1995 movie, which was one of my favorite things, and I wanted to be Christina Ricci.
It's
a shock to no one, because I also wanted to be her in Addams Family. So
this is fair. We're just you know, hitting the same beats as we hit last year at this time. But yeah, so Scooby-Doo meets Casper, is something that popped up in 1987. Scooby-Doo meets the Boo Brothers. I don't think this is like the ones that we're thinking about, but you know, maybe.
I don't know. I've
seen the Boo Brothers.
I do know, like, basically Casper does a ton of crossovers, and that's why when it comes to, like, meeting him, I'm like, I don't know, because he was all over the place. At this point, he does more crossovers than his own thing.
Yeah, at this point, for sure. I saw Casper in the cartoon show, like, in, like, the 60s and 70s when it was, like, on Boomerang. I used to, like, go to my great-grandma's house after school when I was in elementary school sometimes, and I'd watch, like, Boomerang, and sometimes Casper would pop up. I'm like, oh, that's Casper's cool. But it's really the 1995 movie that kind of sticks out more to me because it's really, really good, and we'll talk about it as a live action that actually works pretty well and actually did some really cool, innovative stuff that we will discuss a little bit later.
But also, we only talk about the 1995 movie and not the sequential movies that come after it that are terrible.
I watched so many of them.
I did too, and they're terrible.
I don't think they're that bad. I don't think they're as bad good as the 1995 one. I don't think they were that bad. I mean, Hilary Duff is the Good Witch. She's not bad.
Nobody cares.
I love that movie so much.
It's all right. Me and Kay will talk about it.
No.
Yeah. You're all right. All right. It's fine.
What will Matt be a curmudgeon about this episode? Found out.
He's more of the ghostly trio. That's why. That's what it is.
You have big Casper energy, Adrian, though, I will say.
Well, thanks. I try my best to be Casper the Friendly Ghost. I actually like had like a blanket and stuff. I really did love Casper when I was a kid. That movie was really, really good. And I watched like those direct-to-DVD movies because we had them on the VHS. So I watched all three of those series a whole bunch. But we'll talk about those a little bit later. We'll jump into some of the production history. So if you have no idea who Casper is, where have you been for the last 80 years, like almost 100 years at this point, of history of Casper. So Casper, last name McFadden, the friendly ghost is...
What?
Yeah, they...
Yeah,
they,
he's actually a kid that died.
Okay, I wasn't asking that. I was asking about the McFadden piece.
Yeah, the McFadden piece comes in the 1995 movie where they actually give him a last name. So he doesn't have a last name all the way up until that point.
Really? They shouldn't have done that. That's weird.
Yeah.
You know, okay.
Casper, I don't remember McFadden.
I don't really remember it either. It just kind of popped up in the thing. I don't think they ever say, like, his name is McFadden. I think they talk about his dad as McFadden, so that would make him
the son him of McFadden.
So.
The whole part of the movie is finding
Not out. All of us, Matt, remember movies shot for shot.
I just remember the dancing scene and the Can I Keep You scene. I don't remember you talk about his dad. Who cares about his dad?
I remember that, and then I remember his dad on, her dad on the like little roller coaster thing.
Yeah. So Casper the Friendly Ghost is the protagonist of the Famous Studios theatrical animated cartoon series of the same name. He is a pleasant and personable ghost, but often criticized by his three wicked uncles, the ghostly trio, Fatso, Stinky, and Stretch. This is also like one of the oldest franchises I think that we've covered with Why Though, and to kind of preface this kind of history part here, as we've talked about in some of these older shows, the 40s through 60s is such like a weird time with like character rights and who owns what at what time and where are things coming on TV when, what is a TV show, since a lot of this stuff is just like movies that they just break up into like episodes sometimes. So it's gonna be a little bit crazy, it might get a little bit jumbled, but we're gonna work our way through it as best we can. So Casper was created in the late 1930s by Seymour Reet and Joe Aureliallo. Aureliallo, yeah, the former devising the idea for the character and the latter providing the illustrations. Initially intended as the basis of a 1939 children's storybook, there was at first little interest in their idea, so much so when Seymour was away on military service during World War II before the book was even released, Joe, the illustrator, sold the rights to the book to Paramount Pictures, Famous Studios Animation Division for a total of $175. This was a one-time payment, and was all he received, missing out on a share of all the revenue earned from films, comics, and merchandising to
Matt,
come.
Do the math. What was that?
Which is a lot.
What was $175 in old-timey money?
Like, tell you that much, it's not even close to what he would have made, even if just from royalties from that 1995 movie.
That's fair, yeah. But I'm curious as to what was the, like, what was the impact of the $175 on this man's life?
I don't know.
Either way, it's gonna be dumb. Like, he gave up millions and millions for, like, $1,000. But I'm very interested on the old-timey money specs, and you're the math man, Matt. Alliteration.
So what year is this again?
According to 2013dollars.com, which is an actual website, $175 in 1939 would be $3,272 in today money.
Yeah, I got about $3,235 in this other one.
Yeah.
One, inflation. Two, that sucks.
Yeah, it's still like, again, and we'll talk about how much the movie made, because the movie did make a lot of money. The merchandising makes a lot of money, so he basically lost out on a lot of that stuff. Basically, like George Lucas himself before George Lucas is around to not.
And also, like Tony Hawk, who turned down $500,000 to basically say, "I need royalties." At the end of the day, all we take percentage cut and royalties over one-time checks, no matter
what. Get your merchandising rights always, always.
Because if it fails, who cares? It sucks. You may have locked out, but if it doesn't fail, you're set for life.
Yeah. Kate, when you get made into a Funko Pop, make sure you maintain your merchandising rights for your anime Funko Pop that will eventually come.
I look cute like a Funko. I already got a big head.
Put it right next to your baby Yoda. So the Friendly Ghost, which was the name of the kind of first show that they had after the children's book came out, was the first novel tune to feature Casper, which was released by Paramount in 1945. So the book basically comes out in 1939, early 1940s, and then the first animation comes out in 1945 with a few differences from the book. In the cartoon adaptation, Casper is a cute ghost child with a New York accent who inhabits a haunted house along with a community of adult ghosts who delight in scaring the living. Casper, however, is a nonconformist among ghosts. He would prefer to make friends with people. He packs up his belongings and goes into the world hoping to find friends. So, just a super wholesome dude. However, kind of into the 50s, Casper has some cartoons that are just kind of dark. Which I think is kind of like the note of a lot of these cartoons coming up in the 1950s. I think we talked about it. I don't remember what episode exactly, but there was that whole kind of backlash with like Hanna-Barbera, and then like this is like the devil, and you're teaching our kids bad things. I'm pretty sure that this was probably a lot of that as well.
We also talked about it with Adam's Family.
Yeah. I was like, Adam's Family was the big one that I remember talking about that.
Yeah, and it basically, lots of the stuff in the 50s is super dark, and we'll kind of talk about that in one of the But Why Those. But past the animation part, in 1959, Harvey Comics, you might know Harvey Comics from Richie Rich, purchased the rights to Casper from Famous Properties after putting out some comics for the series since 1952. And this is where we get more or less the Casper we know today. There was a previous publication through St. John's Publication that put out comics in 1949, but they weren't nearly as popular as a TV show or what the Harvey Comics put out with their production line of the series. So basically, by 1959, Harvey Comics basically owns the rights to Casper. After Harvey bought the rights to Casper and many other famous properties in 1959, so there's a lot of other characters that show up constantly in Casper who aren't really as important. You might not even really remember them, but it happens because Harvey purchases the rights from famous properties. They begin broadcasting the post September 1950s theatrical famous shorts, basically the ones that weren't as dark. So they stayed away from all the stuff in the 40s and then just kind of started rebroadcasting the ones from the 50s after they got those rights, kind of in a syndication form to bring back the popularity. After that, Casper would go on to put on multiple TV shows from 1969, basically on and off all the way up till 2012. There are some gaps, and we'll see that when we start talking about kind of longevity, but basically it's been on and off more or less since 1959 with a small gap, and of course it's not on the air now, but they're trying to bring it back in various ways that we'll talk about a little bit later. For the films, numerous Casper cartoons were released on home video by Universal Studios, which also adapted the Friendly Ghost into the live action feature that we're talking about in 1995, simply just called Casper. And it is, and we'll talk about this, but it's one of the, I think it's like one of like the coolest movies, and it still holds up really, really well. Even the CGI in it is really good. It's done by ILM, which we've covered in the past. So following the 1995 movie's release, they released several video games based on the films, like a lot of video games based on the films, because that's what you do in the 90s. That's what you do in the 90s. Yes. You get a video game, or you have a movie, then you make a bunch of video games off of it and hope one of them sticks. Yeah. And a bunch of other games from the other movies are also get made, basically from 1995 up until 2008 with the PS2, DS, and Wii. You have some Casper games sprinkled throughout the that decade or so. So that's really all I have for the production history. It's very, very short, mainly because like the dudes sold off their rights as soon as like they made it, and then they kind of just like ran with it. Like in this, you know, Adventure Today, Casper does this. It's a very like straightforward show, but they do cover some kind of, not, I wouldn't say like super heavy topics, but lots of kind of wholesome, after you watch this episode, you have like a life lesson kind of things that are very straightforward. And again, the TV show isn't as popular. The movie's probably the most popular thing, or the movies are the most popular thing that we'll kind of talk about here in a second. So if there's no more questions on the history, we're going to go right into our But Why Those. But before we do, we have a special message from St. Jude's Children's Hospital and how you can use your fandom for good and fight childhood cancer. Join supporters around the world and raise money for the kids of St. Jude's Children's Research Hospital, where families never receive a bill for treatment, travel, housing, or food, because all a family should worry about is helping their child live.
Each year, approximately 16,000 children and teens in the U.S. are diagnosed with cancer. 1 in 5 of these children won't survive. St. Jude won't stop until no child dies from cancer.
It is estimated that more than 400,000 children worldwide develop cancer each year, and nearly half of them are never diagnosed. St. Jude won't stop until no child dies from cancer.
Donate today at stjude.org/butwhytho to join the fight to cure childhood cancer again. That is stjude.org/butwhytho to donate now. All right, so let's get into some But Why Those. So usually our first But Why Though is kind of successful, but it's kind of hard to measure the success of Casper compared to things like, you know, The Addams Family or Scooby-Doo or some of these other cartoons that come up around this time. So I would say more the longevity of it is the kind of the more important part, because it's kind of had its foot, its ghostly foot, in just about everything dating back to 1939. So Casper was created in 1939 as a children's book, but still, you know, persists as recognizable even in 2020. So Casper the Friendly Ghost was featured in a Geico commercial last year with the same animation style from the 1995 movie, and like looks basically like the same as the 1995 movie. Like that animation, that CGI isn't too far off. It was even so popular in the 50s that it kind of had its own knockoffs, kind of like we talked about with Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, how you get all these other anthropomorphic animal things. You had Timmy the Timid Ghost.
I remember that one.
Timmy the Timid Ghost and Homer the Happy Ghost. I think Homer the Happy Ghost is through Archie Comics. I can't remember what Timmy the Timid Ghost is through, but yeah, it had its own knockoffs in the 50s that obviously don't do as well as Casper the Friendly Ghost, mainly because it's first, a lot like Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles and things like that.
So I remember Timmy the Timid Ghost because he looked like almost like the dope.
Yeah, a little bit.
Oh, I do know little Timmy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, yeah, now that I see that, I know. That's interesting. Casper was big enough to have knockoffs.
I don't remember Homer the Happy Ghost, but I do remember Timmy the Timid Ghost.
Yeah, I think Homer the Happy Ghost is probably more of, like, the direct knockoff, where, like, Timmy the Timid Ghost, if I remember right. Because I remember, like, seeing, like, looking through some of, like, the things as I was doing the notes, and it looked like he was just kind of scared of everything and just ran away from everybody. Whereas, like, Casper was like, hey, yes, like, let's be friends kind of thing.
Yeah.
So we talked about comics kind of in the production history. So Casper was basically featured in close to 40 series under Harvey Comics alone, dating back to 1952, with the most recent being Casper and the Spectrals in 2009 that sold 6,400 copies, which may not seem like a lot, but for Casper,
not bad for comics.
And the, you know, Casper the Friendly Ghost, who was basically at that time not even on TV at that time for the last, you know, 10 years between its last show and like that comic coming out. So not too bad, but basically like Casper lives in comics basically all the way up until that 90s movie and like the 90s TV show essentially, and does pretty well there under that, and does a lot of crossovers between Scooby-Doo and, you know, this and that basically all throughout. And I'll put a link to like all of the comic series that they were in, but it's just a whole bunch of them kind of doing the comic thing of lots of crossovers, especially in that early time where no one cares about rights of characters and you can just throw whoever you want together in a crossover.
Good times.
For the television that
now they're just in a crossover because they're owned by
exactly the same person. Yeah, so now there's not like a merchandising thing, it's just like, who do we want to put together in this thing, which doesn't seem as fun because they don't get any like big scandals on like who's using my characters. So for the television shows, there are five of them. So Maddie's Fun Day Funnies is where it kind of got its big start in 1949 through 1961, and that was kind of just more shorts than anything. The New Casper Show in 1963 through 1970, Casper and the Angels, very short-lived, 1979 to 1980. The Spooktacular New Adventures of Casper.
I would like to point out that Casper and the Angels sounds like Casper had a biker gang.
Yeah, a little bit, right? Like, he sounds like he had like a biker gang, and he wasn't out being nice to people.
Yep.
But I think it was like, if I remember right, it was like some, it's like the Jetsons kind of thing. I don't really understand, like, what was the point of this one.
I'm just going to run with the image of Casper leading a biker gang.
I mean, he's basically That's leading funny. A space biker gang, if you look at some of these pictures, so that tracks. So the Spooktacular New Adventures of Casper, the 1996 to 1998. That's basically the direct spinoff of the movies.
I watched that.
Yeah, that's the one that most of us watched. It has the same voice actor as the Casper in the 1995 movie, so very kind of close to home in how that works. Casper Scare School in 2009 through 2012. This show wasn't too bad. It's
underrated. Yeah. I don't mind it. Yeah, watch this one.
Matt, you like something that came after the movie?
No, I did like, but I watched both of those Casper shows. I actually like Casper, just Casper hasn't been around.
Casper Scare School was good because it was like a little bit different, right? It put them in like the scare school, so you can do like more things than him just having like wacky adventures.
It reminded me of the Ghoul School.
Yeah.
The one that Scooby-Doo goes to.
Yeah, exactly.
So this is also 2012. Cartoons hadn't started to get terrible by then yet.
Oh, gosh.
Yeah, this is like
Look at all of those. But I do remember I've seen some of the new Casper cartoon show. Obviously, just bits and pieces, you know, growing up. I haven't watched that too much. But obviously, the two main ones, I've definitely seen all of that. And I did like the Scare School, and it definitely underrated for being different of what it did. But it also didn't last.
Yeah, it didn't last long. But, you know, I liked it. I thought it was super cute. Like, they were a bunch of, like, little... It was like watching Hotel Transylvania as a kid. Maybe probably why I like Hotel Transylvania so much. Because it has, like, that same kind of, like...
Also an underrated movie. Very good for the spooky season.
Exactly. Pretty good. The Professor's cool. I loved it. It was really good. Future, we really don't have anything on the plate right now. But it is owned by DreamWorks pretty recently. So we could have some series at some point. Because DreamWorks does really well with some of these series. So hopefully, I don't know, maybe we get a movie, maybe we get a series. I'd be down for sure.
I'd take a series. I don't know if I'd want another movie.
Yeah.
I'd take a series.
Yeah, true.
Have Christina Ricci come back as a mom.
That'd be kind of cool. Wait, the implications of Christina Ricci coming back for... That'd be weird, right? That'd be kind of weird.
Yeah, never mind. Yeah, it might be a little weird. I'd take it back. Put it back in the box.
So for the films, there are a bunch, mainly because the animation side of it. So there are 55 theatrical cartoons through Famous Studios, and that was kind of the bulk of what they put on TV, basically just like long episodes of the thing. That's kind of just what they did back in the day. They called them theatrical cartoons. There were some direct-to-video films, Casper's Haunted House in 2000, and a television film based on Casper's Scare School in 2006. So...
Actually,
that one was really good.
I really like the movie Scare School.
This is the most excited I've heard Matt in a long time, and I'm very excited for it, and I'm glad it was Casper.
That's spookiness bonds everybody.
Spookiness bonds.
No, I've actually, like I said, it's not that I never liked Casper. We just don't have any Casper.
We have him in the Geico commercial.
They haven't had enough. They haven't done enough Casper's to ruin Haunted Casper
Christmas
for me.
Casper's Haunted Christmas was fun too. I liked that one.
Yeah, I think you're right there, Matt. Like they're, and I'm okay with it not being back, and not, like being super kind of out there because again, like you're right, like it hasn't been ruined by anything. That's why when I.
They haven't ran into the ground.
That's why I brought up the episode in general because I was watching football, a couple Sundays ago, and the Geico commercial popped up, and I was like, "Is that Casper? They put Casper in a Geico commercial, and it looks like the Casper from 1995. Really? Okay. So it still has that relevance, at least to be in a Geico commercial. Someone there is getting royalties, or someone's getting paid, but it's not the creators. We know that much, at least.
Yeah, it's not the
They're
creators.
They're also probably
that guy went
dead
to war.
Now.
I think they are actually. Now I'm thinking about it. Yeah. So.
I mean, they have families.
True. So you have also the live action. So you have the theatrical film, the 1995 movie. Again, more on this when we get into our own, but why those? And then we have the direct-to-video movies that happened because they didn't have faith in the sequel of Casper. Casper, A Spirited Beginning in 1999. Especially supposed to be like a prequel.
That is terrible.
It's supposed to be a prequel to the 1995 movie. This is the one with Earl Jones and Pauly Shore as a ghost. Read that sentence.
Not terrible.
The one with James Earl Jones and Pauly Shore. Come on. You don't want that?
It was fun.
Why was it direct to video?
Because that's all they did back then. It didn't. Direct to video only has a bad connotation the mid to late 2000s.
This movie was
It
terrible.
Was not.
I meant with this thing.
No, it was good. I liked James Earl Jones in this one, and I thought they were good. I thought Pauly Shore was going to do it too. And also, technically, Tokyo Drift was directed movies, and it's...
Hold on. Just to let you know, Casper, Spirit of Beginning has a zero on
Rotten
Tomatoes.
It has five reviews. I looked at that. That did not...
No.
Kate's going to go rectify that right now.
It has a zero.
Kate's going to go give it 100% right now.
I am. Time for me to write a retrospective on Casper, A Spirited Beginning.
It also has a 41% audience score. The movie is terrible.
It is not terrible. Why is it a zero? Terrible. Oh, my God.
So he has, five reviews or something like that. I don't think he has...
No, and, four of them say, quote, not available.
Because that's how bad it was. I couldn't even give you a quote.
You got review bombed. that's what happened.
Stop review bombing Casper.
So when we have Casper Meets Wendy in 1998, that's the second directed video movie. And this is the one with...
Also
no!
Terrible.
No!
Hillary Duff
Casper
as
Meets
Wendy,
Wendy
the Good
is
Witch.
Amazing.
Yeah, no. Hillary Duff as Wendy is a Good Witch. That one was good.
It also has a 17% on Rotten Tomatoes.
But how many people have actually
seen it? No, you don't get to do this. Because every time we talk about something from a long time ago that has Rotten Tomatoes scores that are bad, you say it doesn't count because this came out way before.
Oh, my bad. It has a 46%
audience score.
I'm not going
to listen to Harlene Ellen from the Chicago Tribune, who reviewed this in 2019 when it came out in 1998.
Yeah.
Hold on, this one from 2002, which is literally only 3 years after the movie.
It's still after.
Gives it a 0.5.
Matt used to do this whole don't do retroactive things.
Hold on, 3 years? We're going with 3 years?
Unless it fits you. Casper and Wendy was dope.
The movie was terrible.
The witches were so cool.
These were both terrible.
No. Again, the witches were so cool.
Rotten Tomatoes
has six reviews on it, I think, for that one, too. There's no...
And they're all terrible. Apparently it's one out of six.
No. Yeah, it's fine. Hey, somebody
gave that a
0.5. Despite negative reviews, Casper Meets Wendy won the Children's Programming Electric Visual Effects Award. And Hilary Duff was nominated for the Young Actors Award. So.
Yeah, because everybody liked Hilary Duff at the time.
No, they didn't! She wasn't even in anything! Hilary Duff wasn't anything at this time!
That's a lie.
God!
Are we going to go look up Hilary Duff's filmography now?
I am looking up Hilary Duff's filmography right
Lizzie
now.
Lizzie McGuire hadn't come out yet. Lizzie McGuire comes out in 2001. You know what?
Duff, so she has a full year of Lizzie McGuire and then goes right into
this movie.
This movie
came out in 1998, Matt.
Wait, okay.
You're
dumb. Even more.
It came out in 1998. This movie was so good, it gave her own series.
That's not
how
that works.
Yeah, it is exactly how it works. That's
exactly how that works.
This is her first movie, actually.
Yeah, so Hilary Duff was big at the time. No, Matt, sit down.
She was four.
Still
I love
17%
it when
Rotten Tomatoes.
And he just digs his heel in.
Both these movies average a 9, 8.3 5 on Rotten Tomatoes.
I'm remembering the slander of Wendy the Good Witch when we make it to something that you like and you say we can't count the score because it was old.
I've actually seen both these movies, and both these movies are terrible.
Well, you know what, Matt? You're terrible. Next point, Adrian. Next point.
So now we have the video games. There's not a lot here because they don't make a whole lot of them. I haven't played any of them. Maybe y'all have played some, but you have Casper, based on the 1995 movie, Casper, A Spirited Beginning Activity Center, which is basically based on the second movie that comes out for the live action, but more of like a learning-based game where we do like puzzles and things like that. Casper Spirit Dimensions 2001 is a 3D game, the first 3D game for Casper. Oh, I skipped one, sorry. Casper Friends Around the World, 2000, a 2D platformer. Casper and the Ghostly Trio in 2007. And then Casper Scare School in 2009, based off of the TV show.
So I played Casper the 1995 game. It was you know, basically what you expect from a movie game. It existed. That's about it.
Yeah.
I do remember Casper Spirit Dimensions. But I don't I remember it being released, but I don't think I ever played it. But that's the only other one that like actually like rings a bell of me being reminded of the game. But I did play the 1995 game, and that's just kind of like, I played a movie game.
You played a movie game in the 90s.
Yeah, it was like it happened.
It was on every single console. Went to Blockbuster,
picked it up. You know, yeah.
Kate, did you play any of these games?
I played the movie game.
Yeah, it's the movie game.
Yeah, my cousin had it. I don't remember much of it at all, but yeah.
Yeah, I don't remember.
It's like playing Aladdin or playing Lion King or playing Home Alone, or just they all the same.
Yeah, I mean, I remember the cover. I probably saw the cover at like, you know, Hollywood Video or something like that, or you know, some non-existent game renting place. But I don't play any of the games, and probably for good reason, because there are not that many of them. Not as popular as, say, like, you know, the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle games that are much more popular by this time. Musicals. There's actually a few musicals with
Yay!
Casper. So most recently, Casper the Musical in 2001 is basically just a reimagined version of a musical from 1999 that was in the West End. I couldn't really find too many videos for this. I found like some like very choppy videos from the 1999 musical at the West End. It looks bad. Not good. Not good. Looks really bad. But Casper the Friendly Musical. See the play on words there? I think that's cute. In 2019 of last year. Doesn't look too bad. Looks like a pretty quality production out in Cincinnati. And I left a link to this in the show notes. Doesn't look too bad.
Wait, so the Casper musical in West End, the like renowned...
Yeah, exactly.
...play area was Butt Cheeks. And the Cincinnati... musical was great.
Cincinnati.
Yeah, I mean, this one actually looks like an actual production. I think, I mean, I'll, like I said, it's like video from 1990, like video recording from 1999, so take that as you will, because you know, camcorders are barely a thing at that point. But the production value of Casper the Friendly Musical looks much, much higher.
Than what was on London's West End.
Exactly, yeah.
You go, Cincinnati, you go.
But not too bad. I think that they're supposed to keep touring the rest of this year, but obviously, you know, COVID stopped all that from going on. But it doesn't look too bad. Casper has a musical that I think is kind of cool, and which will be important in one of my fun facts later on. So moving on from the longevity, we're going to talk about what probably a lot of you guys are here for.
Okay, yo, this is pretty big stage value. This is
right. Look at it.
Yeah, I clicked on the video. It will be included in the show notes at bytwhythepodcast.com. Damn. Okay, you go. I'm proud of Cincinnati. Look at them. Way better than the Office's Demon Barber of Fleet Street.
That's fair. That's fair.
Which is what I expected when I clicked on that link.
Yeah, that's more the West End one, actually. So let's talk about the 1995 movie, and then me and Kate will probably talk a little bit about the sequels while Matt says they're bad.
Because they are.
I don't like it.
Casper 1995 actually made $289.9 million in 1995 on a $55 million budget. A lot of this was the CGI, but a lot of this was also the marketing. So $13 million in the marketing. But this makes it the eighth highest grossing movie that year behind Seven, Batman Forever, Pocahontas, GoldenEye, Apollo 13, Toy Story, and Die Hard with a Vengeance with his Die Hard 3, which made $366 million. So all of those eight movies were pretty relatively close, and it beat out Waterworld and Jumanji for the top 10 in 1995.
Damn, it beat Jumanji?
Yeah. Like, also, 1995...
Jumanji, I don't think... Yeah, once 1995, Jumanji, I think, ends up getting better with time versus, like, people watch it versus when it first came out, which I think is the inverse of Waterworld.
Very inverse of Waterworld.
The funny thing I always forget is that Batman Forever came out in 1995 and not 1997. I always think it came out in 1997. I don't know why. It just always in my head at 1997.
Your brain in numbers is weird.
But also, these are actually all pretty good movies for the most part. So, like, but the biggest thing that to take away from all of this is the fact that you can be the eighth highest grossing movie for less than $300 million because today you wouldn't even probably crack the top 25.
Yeah. Not wrong. But, I mean, 1995 is not a bad, you know, bad time for movies. So I think that kind of really speaks to how well this does. And really like how well this does, given the fact that there's really nothing outside of a very old TV show and some comics going on, but it was able to pull out, you know, beating things that we now consider pretty good.
I'm certain that there are people who thought this was a new IP.
They're probably.
I wouldn't be surprised.
Not for sure.
I think the main thing about this is when we obviously might get more into, but this movie hits almost every demographic very well.
Definitely.
Yeah, it does.
So even if it's whether a new IP, old IP, or whatever, the demographic, especially if you look at the other ones, like, you're not taking your kids to Seven.
Definitely not. Yeah.
Probably not even taking them to Apollo 13 or even Waterworld or Die Hard. But then you're not taking you're definitely not going on date night to Toy Story, probably.
Yeah.
You know, versus
And this does come out in May, so it comes out end of May.
It feels like Adam's Family for me.
Yeah.
Like, it hits like that nice, kinda like you said, Matt, like it hits everybody. It's like the right amount of spooky for your kids, the right amount of funny for the adults. It just works.
Yeah, it works really well. And I also think that having the actors it has in it makes it really good for at least like the trailer appeal. So producer Steven Spielberg was planning on a film adaptation of Casper the Friendly Ghost. He saw an episode of the television show series Brooklyn Bridge, directed by Brad Silberling, and saw potential in his work, and he recruited him to direct Casper. Mini fun fact here. Apparently, J.J. Abrams did an uncredited rewrite of the script. So J.J. Abrams coming in to rewrite things even back in the 1995 days, and he did it with Casper. The screenplay basically gave a backstory of Casper being a ghost of Casper McFadden, a boy who died of pneumonia at 12. Though some of the comics, particularly in the 1960s, portrayed him as just a ghost with ghost parents. So this is the first time that we actually get a actual backstory of Casper as an actual child and not just like a dude who has like ghost parents.
Okay, not gonna...
I never believed the ghost through ghost parents
thing. No, I like the ghost through ghost parents thing because it...
That was dumb.
No, it's cool because it goes to, like, the scare school and the ghoul school and you just have, like, these, like, monsters.
That means ghosts have sex, Kate.
And? No, I like the concept of... I like the ghost with ghost parents because I really like that, like... Here's a world of monsters with werewolves and ghosts and vampires, and they all do their own thing. It's like Hotel Transylvania. There are ghost kids with ghost parents there. It just happens, Matt. It's fantasy. You don't need explanations.
So you do have your ghost parents there, you don't have the ghost parents anymore, and you basically just have our first actual thing, not anything of the conspiracy theories that basically happened since the 1940s. And the cast itself is pretty solid, like I said before. And I think this is most likely due to Spielberg's attachment with Universal. I don't know if they pull this kind of these actors at the time without kind of that attachment. But Casper, with a great voiceover from Malachi Pearson?
Malachi?
Sorry. That looks like Malachi. English tells me.
That looks like Malachi.
Hey, she, I watch anime.
I play fantasy. It's everything Kai.
But he does so well in this that he actually does the voiceover work for Casper in the TV show and does a really, really great job.
Question.
Yes.
Is Malachi Pearson just the voice, or is he also the person they have play him in the movie?
He's not the little boy. They got another little boy for that.
They got another
Boy. Because he's doing the voiceover work as
actor. But he's a teen, isn't he?
Well, he does. Well, like I say like little boy because he's like younger, right? But at the time, you know, what is he? Like 14? 14? Something like
that? Okay, I got it.
Yeah. And they got like a younger kid to play the actual thing, but he does all the voice work for it. Kat is played by Christina Ricci. I'm pretty sure Kate has a whole laundry list of things that Christina Ricci is in.
I wanted to be her.
But
I loved her so much.
She basically like murders like the child acting game. Of course, Wednesday from the Addams Family, plus lots of other stuff into her adult career. Lots of that I haven't seen because a lot of it's like not up my alley, but I know it's probably also up Kate's.
Fun fact, the ballroom that they use in Casper is the same ballroom in the Backstreet Boys music video.
See, I was going to put that in there, but I figured that you were just going to bring it up anyway. Yeah. So I'm glad I didn't put it. I was literally putting it as a fun fact that I was going to save until the very end in case you didn't bring it up, but I figured you were going to bring that up.
Everybody.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. That's reach. That's reach. That's what that is. Dr. James Harvey, played by Bill Pullman, of course, Spaceballs, Independence Day, a bunch of horror stuff. Who doesn't know who Bill Pullman is?
Yeah.
Stinky, played by Joe,
Napote.
What?
Isn't it Napote?
Huh?
Joe Napote?
No, there's...
Stretch.
I don't know if...
I was like... I was reading Stretch. Continue.
It's like, how did you get an N sound out of Alaska?
So Stinky, played by Joe Olosky, has lots of voiceover work prior to his death. Most notably, Grandpa Pickles in the Rugrats, does a bunch of Looney Tunes voiceover work. Does the voiceover for Richard Nixon in Forrest Gump, what I thought was interesting. I had to put that one in there.
I got shot in the ass.
Exactly. I had to put that one in there for sure. Fatso, played by Brad Garrett. That's basically Raymond's brother Raymond's brother's Robert, and Everybody Loves Raymond, and a bunch of voiceover work. Like, you know that man's voice, like the back of your pen.
He does own. He's done a lot of his own sitcoms too that are weird because nobody likes them, but they last 8 seasons, but they're not bad.
Brad Garrett is just a man with a very good voice who is also very tall, so it makes him a very good character actor.
Yeah, he does really good work and does pretty good there. Stretch, played by Joe Niptow. Doesn't have a lot of voiceover work that I could like find that would be notable because he died pretty young, but Steven Spielberg did handpick him to be that voice, so that kind of speaks to kind of how well he does. Kerrigan, played by Kathy Moriarty. Raging Bull, Tales from the Crypt. I'm pretty sure Kate's going to tell you a whole bunch of stuff here.
I love Kathy Moriarty. She's phenomenal. It's because of that annoying freaking voice.
Yeah.
But I've never, no matter what I've watched her in, I haven't been able to separate her from the mean lady in Casper, like, ever. But she's, like, I think she's in Punk. She's in Analyze That. I don't know where else, but I just know that she terrified me growing up, and for the longest time, I confused her with Jennifer Tilly. I don't know why I did that, but it happened.
That's fair.
But yes.
Yeah.
Kerrigan was cool.
Yeah.
And scary.
I'm glad she got thrown off the building.
Quit moving, Kate.
No.
You can hear all of that stuff.
She looks at her audio.
You have to edit this, so you're on your own.
You just...
Dibs, played by Eric Idle. He's the actor and one of the main writers on Monty Python. Vic Garrett Ratliff Henson. Kind of a big thing for him. He plays Guy Germain in the Mighty Duck movies, like as a child actor, and then doesn't really do anything else. There's also a bunch of cameos in this movie that I didn't remember until I went back and rewatched it. Don Navallo, Dan Aykroyd, Fred Rogers, Clint Eastwood, Rodney Dangerfield, Mel Gibson, John Kaiser, who's the Crypt Keeper's voice, also all make cameos in this movie. So you get a lot of people in this movie that have fairly successful careers, but also, like, if you're pulling, you know, Fred Rogers, Dan Aykroyd, Clint Eastwood, Roger Dangerfield, Mel Gibson back before he was crazy, I think that's pretty good for your 1995 movie that is coming out of basically nowhere, essentially. So the reception, it comes with mixed reviews from critics who praise the film for its faithfulness to the source material, specifically to Casper's portrayal, visual effects, music score, and performances, but was criticized for its dark story and humor. But again, I think that speaks to, like, why it works so well for adults, because we, you know, take your thing to, and it's like all happy-go-lucky about a, you know, kid who had, like, pneumonia. Probably doesn't land quite as well, but the humor in it is kind of dark a lot of the times, and so is the story. So it kind of works for that adult thing, but you also have, like, that kind of happy-go-lucky ending at the very end of it at all.
I remember rewatching this. I think I watched it about, like, every Halloween, so I watched it, like, last year. And watching it, I was like, every time I get to, like, the mid to, like, by that time that second act hits, I'm like, oh, this is real dark.
Yeah, it gets
because I remember watching this as a kid. It was like, oh yeah, cool. Even though there's, like, you could tell there was definitely some dark things, but then I remember rewatching it as I got older. But oh. They definitely had a lot of dark things.
Yeah, very, very, very dark. And we'll talk about a little bit, even like in, like, the early stuff was pretty dark, but even this movie is pretty dark, and we'll talk about that more in our next But Why, though. But the, in terms of the reception, the CGI effects were considered cutting edge at the time, and the performances of Pullman and Ricci were praised, especially considering that in the scenes where the Harveys are interacting with ghosts, Pullman and Ritchie were actually just acting with nothing but, like, mannequins and tennis balls used for animators' references, which is a large part of the movie, obviously.
That's really good.
And because of that, the CGI, like a lot of things that Industrial Light's Magic does, we've covered them this year, the CGI holds up super well. So if you go back and rewatch this movie, the CGI is pretty good. We've covered this and we talked about this before. The first full CGI character was the stained glass man in Young Sherlock Holmes. But Casper 1995 is considered to have the first CGI character that's in a leading role, meaning, like, the majority of it is focused on them. This was the first feature-length live-action film with a digitally created 3D CGI character that had almost 40 minutes of film time, and it had a record number of on-screen shots over 350 with a digital character. Making a movie in which animated ghosts have to interact with human actors proved to be super difficult and complex, requiring the equivalent of 19 million floppy disks of CGI images.
So 1 gigabyte.
Yeah, but, you know, back then, I mean, 19 million floppy disks. That's a lot of floppy disks.
Yeah, but as we've learned before, those floppy disks only held, like, not even a one image exactly. Worth of data.
In fact, CGI was only, and this isn't, like, a knock on Jurassic Park at all, but I know that at the same time, Jurassic Park is, like, really heralded for their use of CGI dinosaurs. But CGI was only used in 40 shots during Jurassic Park. In Casper, the friendly ghost and the three spectral uncles appear in far more scenes, requiring 250 CGI sequences compared to, like, the 40 of Jurassic Park. But obviously, this is more focused on ghosts, whereas Jurassic Park is more focused kind of on, like, the humans running away from dinosaurs that they let out.
Yeah, because I think that that's a really good distinction, too, because, like, as much as I know people, like, herald Jurassic Park for its CG, I herald it for its practical effects.
Yeah.
And the fact of them being able to actually, like, create these things, or, like, watching this movie, watching Casper even today, it is still good. Like, that CG actually holds. It holds better than, like, the prequels.
Yeah, I totally agree there. So, I've included a YouTube clip in the show notes of kind of, like, that ending dancing scene and kind of how that looks, because you get basically a lot of this. You get, you know, a lot of the CGI and a lot of the practical effects right inside of that, and it holds up pretty well. Like, it's not bad. Special effects artists spent 2 years on this project, altering many scenes frame by frame. In fact, a 90-second chat between Casper and Ritchie took almost 8 months to create with its complexities. Again, this is 1995. We don't know a whole lot about CGI. ILM is basically kind of leading the way in a lot of this stuff, and they're just kind of killing it with things, taking what they learned from Jurassic Park and kind of applying it to Casper and things after. So any final thoughts on the movie and how great it is? I know we've talked about it a bunch already, but it's pretty good. It holds up really, really well.
I just love it a whole bunch.
Yeah, it's always going to basically reiterate of it actually holds up very well.
Yeah, and
I think that there are a lot. I was just going to say, I think there are a lot of movies. I think the 90s and the early 90s, there were a lot of movies that were spooky and like kind of in that all ages realm. And I think this kind of like seals that for me. So I don't know. I loved it. I loved it. Still has a huge place in my heart.
Yeah, and we'll talk a little bit about kind of its heavier notes in our last but why, though. But I do, like, have to mention that this stuff kind of got a little bit dark at times. I think that needs to be, like, referenced because while this isn't anything compared to, like, the movies and franchises that Kate has covered in the past, Casper's gotten pretty dark, and the movie is kind of tame in comparison to kind of some of the old stuff. So in the first 1945 cartoon, Casper just wants to meet new friends, as we talked about before. You know, he's living with all like the adult ghosts. He just wants to make friends. However, the animal he meets, a rooster, a mole, a cat, a mouse named Herman, and a group of hens, they all take a horrified look at him, scream, "A ghost!" and run off in the other direction. Distraught, Casper unsuccessfully attempts to commit suicide, apparently forgetting that he's already dead, by lying down on a railroad track before an oncoming train, before he meets two children named Bonnie and Johnny, who he becomes friends with. The children's mother, apparently widowed and impoverished, at first is frightened of Casper, but welcomes him into the family after he unintentionally frightens off a greedy landlord who, unwilling to own a haunted house, tears up the mortgage and gives her the house outright. The short ends with the mother kissing Bonnie and Johnny and Casper as she sends them off to school, with Casper wearing clothing as if he were a living child.
So, one, I thought the Casper, the, I guess, commit suicide thing.
Yeah, because I thought he does it a little bit in the movie, doesn't he?
Yeah.
Yeah, he does it a little bit in the movie, if I remember correctly. Because that is something they do quite a bit.
When you actually call it, when you actually call it, they don't call it that.
Yeah, he just be like, I'm, you know, he just like said laying down on a train track and then remembers he's a ghost.
Yeah, and that was going to be like my next reference. Like, they reference that stuff a lot. Like, they reference that this dude is like not alive a lot. Like, this dude is just trying to be a nice person, and they just, they always hit those notes that he's like a, he's not a living, it's pretty crazy. But then it just, like, keeps on going, because Casper appeared in two more subsequent cartoons. There's A Good Booze Tonight and A Haunting Will Go. There's A Good Booze Tonight differs wildly from the later cartoons, although the themes of Casper trying to find a friend and failing in those attempts before succeeding occurs in later cartoons. The tone of this short turns remarkably dark when a hunter and his dogs appear chasing the little fox cub named Ferdy that Casper has befriended. Although Casper scares the hunter and dogs away, Casper discovers Ferdy dead after a harrowing chase escape. Happily, however, Ferdy returns as a ghost to join Casper as his friend in the afterlife. So we're just killing little foxes.
I remember that.
Well, it's the scary thing about the premise is if you want your protagonist, who is a ghost, to be happy, you then have to have him, the things he loves, die so they can be with him.
Yeah. Well, that's so funny because you get all his friends that you meet end up just being dead animals or whatever. Which I think also, I don't know if you get into it, but don't his uncles end up like murdering people from scaring things? And we get some of that.
Yeah,
we
get a lot of that. Yeah, especially like in the older stuff too, and even like hinted at in like the 1995 movies. Like, those dudes are possessing and killing people, I'm pretty sure, like almost like certainly.
Yes.
And even with that, like, the 1995 movie does have those darker tones. So the newspaper clippings in the movie state that Mr. McFadden, Casper's dad, claimed to be haunted by a ghost of his dead son, which the audience knows is true. Yet, whether it's true or not, it basically impacts his mental health, leading to his institutionalization. So, like, he drove his dad crazy because he just kept showing up because he was dead and doesn't have memories, essentially, of, like, his former life. So, not as, like, happy-go-lucky as you think when you first watch the movie. There's some kind of darker stuff in there. But to round us out, there are lots of wholesome messages to be talked about. But there are some wholesome messages and some tough topics even back in the day. So I think Scooby-Doo does a lot of what we talked about in episode 21 and a lot of what Adam's Family does is basically you get those topics that are kind of harder to talk about. But when you package it in kind of like this ghostly form, it goes a little bit better. And we probably don't even get Scooby-Doo without Casper because Casper precedes Scooby-Doo. Adam's Family kind of runs up around that same time. But they both do a lot of the same things. So the majority of the cartoons, even dating back to the 60s, were essentially Casper just being a friendly dude despite being a ghost and people being scared of him due to stereotypes and misconceptions. And he's basically like the ghost version kid of Mr. Rogers, where he just wants everyone to be happy and everybody love everybody. So a couple of like the synopsis of a few episodes that happened back in the early days of Casper. Casper's new friend, the Weeping Willow, is tired of being teased by the other trees, and the little ghost decides to help him. Look, just combat and bullying. That's our guy, Casper. Casper's lookalike, big but muscular cousin, Powerhouse, drops by for a visit, and they team up to scare the ghostly trio into ending their bullying ways. One of the later shows, Casper has had enough of seeing Thatch bully his friends, so he sprays him with a perfume he found in his uncle's magic ointment box, thinking that it'll make Thatch friendly. This is from The Scare School. I don't know if you remember this episode. I do. From The Scare School thing. But even in that, Casper deals with like bullying, even though he's in a place where everyone's like kind of weird anyway. But Casper just kind of just does those things basically throughout. It's basically just him sees a problem, sees someone who wants to help. Like, he's helped like aliens, he's helped like animals, he's helped basically whoever is in need. Casper's kind of there.
So I did know, like, obviously we're doing wholesome, that bullying, obviously, if you meant, has always been a big theme, I thought, through Casper, because of him being nice, and then the way they portray all the uncles in general, because the whole point is to scare and think, and basically, essentially, whether it be scare and murder, or basically bullying, it's, you know, depends on where you draw the line at that point, you know, for ghosts, but that's always been a giant theme for Casper, at least what I've seen.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. It's definitely that kind of theme of being bigger than what you kind of are, you know, kind of not being... He could have just been a scary ghost if he wanted to be, and people would have been, you know, would have went along with that, but he kind of going against the grain, I think, is a kind of good way to put that. Like, you can be a ghost, but you don't have to be possessing people and making them fall off buildings. So, and you get a little bit of this death and grieving, especially the 1995 movie, of dealing with the realities of that, because the reality of it, for a 12-year-old ghost to exist, a child has to die. Human Casper died for playing outside on his sled for too long, and his father was so heartbroken that he spent his life savings constructing a machine to bring his son back to life. Cat in the movie is dealing with the death of like her parents and for, you know, a time her father. Inside of the movie, there's like lots of like death themes in that movie, but I think I was looking for a way to kind of antiquate this a little bit better, but I found this article from Ann Cohen from refinery29.com, and she says the "Can I Keep You" scene, that's like the one like where Christina Ricci's sleeping and things like that, is a generally sad scene. We're seeing the raw potential of a life cut too short. A young man who smirks could make hearts flutter and who could pull off lines like "I told you I was a good dancer." His mother's white lace dress, which Kat wears as a costume, is a reminder of a wedding that he'll never get to have and which her mother will never get to attend. At the time, Dr. Harvey is learning to let go of his own dashed hopes and expectations of a long life lived with his beloved wife by his side. James Horner's haunting, beautiful piano lullaby invokes just the right amount of nostalgia, the tragic cherry of this melancholy Sunday. In a sense, Casper stands as a powerful childhood introduction into the complex realities of death and the need to let go of loved ones, even if, to echo those swoon-worthy four words, we keep their memories with us forever.
So that is great, and that's probably one of the things why, obviously I know we joked about it and did whatever, but why I have liked Casper, because it is a great, whether you like it or not, it is a great thing when an introduction to death and just whether grieving or moving on and the realities that people die. And sadly, like using a child, realizing that not every person sees their whole entire life. And obviously, like I said, we see it all in this movie, but as we talked about before, while it is dark, it is just kind of to show you in the realities of life of death happens And essentially you have to do something, whether it be, like you said, of moving on or just whatever, of accepting that's what it is.
Yeah. Anything to add, add there, Kate, before we get into some fun facts?
I mean, grief as a topic in film and TV is probably one of my favorite things, and it's become more so, especially in the world that's 2020. But I am a strong believer, and we kind of covered a little bit in our Scary Stories to Tell in the Dark episode, that kids need to be exposed to these kinds of things because they need to understand what's coming, because this is something that kind of can hit you out of nowhere. So presenting a piece of media that can help them process those feelings, because it may be something that people in their family had never dealt with, or you end up with parents who don't believe their kid can actually handle the process of grieving, and so they try to shield them from it, and instead of shielding them from it, it just keeps them from actually having that cathartic process. So I think when you look at grief presented this way, and when you look at Casper, it's a very good tool for people to use. That's all I have to say. I mean, I just really like it when things cover grief. I mean, I write about it all the time. So, yeah.
Yeah.
No, I mean, I was just saying, like, just to, like, echo thing, like what I said, like, dealing, as much as dealing with grief, just dealing with death is a very, I guess, whether it's right or wrong, it's fascinating to me, like, how people deal with death, and especially when it comes to exposure of children to death. And just because, I mean, I think I've talked about before of, like, I've obviously experienced plenty of death and people just dying and leaving and stuff, and everything else on this podcast through all the shows. And so it's just one of those, how, you know, children, like I said, you don't have to go over the top, I guess, in the cruelties, but, you know, death should be something that is exposed to children. And I guess that's why I have always liked Casper, as I mentioned before. It's just something that happens all the time.
Yeah, and I think it's also something a little bit different than, say, like Scooby-Doo or even like the Addams Family does.
Right.
Definitely hitting those topics much more poignantly, and it's kind of easier to do when you have a ghost as your main character compared to kind of the things that Scooby-Doo and even the Addams Family or things of that kind of genre of spooky light are dealing with. So let's get into some fun facts, and we'll get out of here because we're almost about that time. So some quick fun facts. Harvey Comics actually sued Columbia Pictures. In 1987, the comic publisher sued the distribution of Ghostbusters, arguing that the movie's logo looked too similar to one of the characters, Fatso, of the Ghostly Trio, one of Casper's uncles. Peaceful also thought that he was the inspiration behind the character, Slimer. However, the court ruled against Harvey Comics, saying the copyright was out of date, and the fact that there are limited ways to draw a cartoon ghost.
So I always liked, I'm pretty sure they do have crossovers, I thought, with Ghostbusters, but I always wondered what that was like.
Yeah. Imagine them trying to, like...
Yeah, what would they do?
Yeah. Yeah, what would they do?
I could have sworn there was Casper versus Ghostbusters things.
Just like a dark, gritty, like, Casper versus Ghostbusters? I'd be down for that. Yeah. Like, make it happen. So... in kind of the, before we get the 1995 movie, there is the one alternate and slightly darker theory that was portrayed and first floated by The Simpsons. In 1991 episode Three Men and a Comic Book, Bart and Lisa speculate that Casper is the ghost of Richie Rich, another Harvey Comics icon. The two bear obviously a strong resemblance. Lisa believes that his realization of how hollow the pursuit of money really is caused Richie to take his own life. Other observers have speculated that Richie's parents killed their son for the insurance money. So.
Yep, I remember that one. But also, to go back to the Ghostbuster thing, I remember, it's because, what's his name, Dan Aykroyd?
Yeah, he does, because they scared Dan Aykroyd in the
That was what it was. Yeah.
So, kind of going back to the musical part, there was actually a big musical number cut from the movie. Casper's uncles were supposed to break into a song titled Lucky Enough to Be a Ghost, the song that was about the trio's depression and difficulties of being a ghost. The scene, however, was cut because it was too expensive. Wow. Yeah. Christina Ricci doesn't think that the movie made sense. After the movie came out, Ricci was asked about her time in Casper, and she had a shocking response. She said, looking back, that movie sucked. It made no sense. I'm supposed to fall in love with a ghost? How does that work? He's like a cartoon. Well, part of him. I imagine, like, this happened when she was, like, still young and still, like, a kid, but I just like the fact that she's like, yeah, the movie sucked. but it also was like the eighth highest grossing movie of like that year. That's funny. You know, whatever. And then to kind of round us out on a more positive note, I guess, there was actually a theme park ride, the Casper World at Universal Studios Hollywood, which launched alongside the movie, ran for 4 months, was an impressive area that included recreations of the Whipstaff Mansion, various pieces of memorabilia for the movie, and several stations showcasing the then impressive tech behind making the movie. Obviously, this is a very groundbreaking movie in terms of CGI, so apparently they had a thing we can go look and see how the movie magic was actually made, because the movie set was, the mansion is actually just a movie set, wasn't an actual
mansion. That's really cool.
All right, yeah, so that's really all I got for us today. Like we said at the very top of the episode, Casper really hasn't done a whole lot over the years, but the things that he has done I think are important, especially like Matt and Kate said, like really, really beautifully about the themes of death and those realities. So I think that's kind of, at least for me, kind of why this series matters. And given that it's with DreamWorks, I think DreamWorks could really put on a good series for Casper and kind of give it that, you know, light again to cover those things that we've talked about and those things, because I can't really think of a lot of children's TV shows that hit these notes but also are accessible for adults to watch to kind of have those notes as well. Final thoughts, Kate?
No, I mean, I kind of talked about it, right? I liked this episode because I definitely learned more about Casper that was outside of just the 1995 movie and Wendy. Because Wendy's amazing. But no, I think Casper is a really good, property, I guess. I would love to see them do stuff with it again. Whether it's live action or animated, I think bringing it back would be a really good thing.
Matt?
Yeah, obviously, as we mentioned before, I actually really enjoyed Casper growing up. I've been a fan of Casper. Maybe the biggest fan of Casper ever. But no, it's just, you know, they haven't, just Casper hasn't been around as I grew up more so than anything else, of why just probably not brought up in anything else. And I mean, I would be excited if they brought something back. I'm not preferably wanting a live action. I'm tired of just some of these live action, to be honest. But I think just, you know, animated stuff and probably more of a series, I think you could do a lot. I did enjoy the two, you know, even the most recent of Scare School. Like I said, I adore the character and it, I do enjoy the realities of basically what it means for this character. Like, basically, to be a friend, you die. But no, I'd be interested if we get more stuff for Casper, as long as we don't end up, you know, running it into the ground by 700 different things.
Yeah, and you mentioned that at the top of the show, and I think that's a good place to end. Like, Casper still matters because it hasn't been run into the ground yet, and we're not tired of seeing it. It's why when you see it in a Geico commercial, you're like, oh yeah, you know, there's Casper. It's why when you go watch the 1995 movie, you don't have a whole lot of things, at least in my opinion, that came after it that you're like, oh, that, you know, everything else after this point was like trash, because you still have the cartoon, you still have, or you have both the cartoons and some people would say the two direct-to-video movies that are still.
Yeah.
Nobody on Rotten Tomatoes, but some people.
Some people outside of those five people who reviewed it on Rotten Tomatoes, but I'm going to rely on Kate, our Rotten Tomatoes critic, to come save the two Casper movies from having terrible reviews. But that's all I have for Casper. Thanks for letting me do another spooky episode, and be ready for more spooky stuff to come this month from Kate.
Yep. Actually, we should plug it here, because I know you're going to hear the outro here, but currently the But Why Though poll for episode that we have to do because we're running the campaign for St. Jude is at Muppets. If you're listening right now and you want us to record an episode on either Vin Diesel, West Side Story, Cats, or The Muppets, head on over to stjude.org/butwhythough, and you get to choose which one. At the end of the campaign is when we will take the winner, so we'll be running this whole time. Right now, The Muppets are beating everybody with Vin Diesel right behind them.
Thank you, Vin the person who donated $15 to the Vin Diesel episode. I appreciate you very much. As long as it's not Cats. Please not Cats.
Please go vote. Just know I appreciate your vote. But not. But I do like the Muppets, and I hope we get to talk about the 90s Muppets, because they are
great. I like just how like that just Matt just like resuscitated and jumped out his chair letting us know that he likes the 90s Muppets.
I like the Muppets, and then Disney buys the Muppets, and the Muppets.
Do you know who that didn't happen with? Casper. Let's go.
Exactly. As always, you can find us at But Why Though PC on all of our social media, and you can find me at Oh My Myth Randier on Twitter. Adrian.
Yeah, you can find me on Twitter at SuperRuiz93, SuperRuiz93.
I will always trust DreamWorks over Disney when it comes to my animation properties.
That's fair. I'm not wrong.
Make sure you head to stjude.org/butwhythough and donate to St. Jude Children's Research Hospital. Doing so, you'll be able to make me sing a karaoke song.
Make me do a TikTok dance.
Make me do a mystery challenge from the St. Jude Play Live Challenge Box.
And if we hit our goal of $5,000, you'll even get a chance to choose what color I dye my hair. So again, head on over to stjude.org/butwhytho.